that you're here. I know God is glad that you're here as well. There's a man named Edmund Burke. He was an 18th century British politician. I believe he was a member of the House of Commons. But that was the time during which the American Revolution took place. And he was fortunately a staunch advocate that Britain should grant the colonies their independence. And he was known for a famous quote, and I love to collect quotes, and this is one of my favorites. He said that all that is necessary for the triumph of evil is that good men do nothing. You may have heard that quote from time to time. So much of the history of the struggle between good and evil can be explained by Mr. Burke's quote. Time and time again, those that profess to be good seem to be clearly outnumbered by those that are evil. Yet those that are evil seem to prevail far too often, don't they, in this world? Well, numbers certainly never determine the outcome. But whether those who claim to be good men are willing to stand up and fight for what they know to be right, that's what determines the outcome. There are numerous of examples in the scriptures of this awful and sad scenario being played out, where evil triumphs over good because there are good men that just choose to do nothing. So I want to examine the scriptures very briefly this evening with an eye to that quote, that all that is necessary for the triumph of evil is that good men do nothing. Well, think about it. When good men do nothing, they get nothing done because they're doing nothing. To be good, one must do good. The Lord commands his people to do good. In Luke 6 and verse 35, Jesus said, "But love your enemies, do good, and lend, hoping for nothing in return, and your reward will be great, and you'll be sons of the Most High." So part of being sons of the Most High is the doing of good. In Ephesians 2 and verse 10, Paul writes that we are God's workmanship. We are created in Christ Jesus for what? For good works, which God prepared beforehand that we should walk in them. In Titus 2 and verse 14, Paul tells us that Christ gave himself for us, that he might redeem us from all iniquity and purify unto himself a peculiar, now notice, zealous of good works. So we must do good. We must do good works. We must walk in the works that God prepared beforehand that we should walk therein. Ken read for us the parable of the talents, and you'll notice that Jesus described three men. And I think all of those men were good men, but he described that last man, the one talent man, as a man who did what? He did nothing. When the one talent man received the Lord's money, he went and dug a hole in the ground and hid his Lord's money. That's all that he did. Insofar as the money was concerned in making the money grow, he did nothing. And when he returned, what happened? The Lord wasn't pleased. The servant didn't do anything outright evil. He didn't steal the money. He didn't spend the money on profligate living like the prodigal son. But neither did he do anything good. And when he didn't do anything good, nothing got done. And Jesus called him what? A wicked and lazy servant. So doing nothing is not an option when it comes to serving God. In Ezekiel 22 and verse 30, the Lord said, "I sought for a man among them who would make a wall and stand in the gap before me on behalf of the land." Somebody that's going to stand up for right in order that God would do what? That he wouldn't destroy Judah, wouldn't destroy Jerusalem, But what was the case? I found none. Jesus, you remember, rebuked the church at Laodicea in Revelation chapter 3 because they did nothing. Turn over there and let's read three verses. Revelation 3, beginning in verse 15. I know your works, that you are neither cold nor hot. I could wish that you were cold or hot. So then, because you are lukewarm and neither cold nor hot, I will vomit you out of my mouth. Because you say, I am rich, I have become wealthy, I have need of nothing, and do not know that you are wretched, miserable, poor, blind, and naked, because what, you do nothing. Well, some Christians and some churches are do-nothings. They stand idly by. They're merely spectators. They sit on the sidelines instead of actively participating and working for good. When we lived in Wisconsin many years ago, when Ryan was just in a car seat, to tell you how cool that was, sometimes I preached at a little place called St. Charles, Minnesota. It was near Rochester, Minnesota. And the kind of the main members there were dairy farmers, the Leonardses. And the wife of that family was from Kentucky. And she was always lamenting about Christians that did nothing. And she described them as they were dying on the vine. I always remembered that. So when we do nothing in the kingdom, we're dying on the vine. And we're in danger of Jesus purging us from that vine. Christians like this, if good wins, they'll join in the celebration, though they did nothing to produce the victory. If evil wins, they will complain long and loud about that, but their own apathy helped produce the victory that evil won. Remember when Jesus found the fig tree? There was nothing on it but leaves. It produced nothing. What did he do? He cursed the tree, and immediately it withered away. So what will Jesus do with those who claim to be good yet do nothing? I think he's going to do the same thing on the day of judgment. John the Baptist warned in Matthew 3 and verse 10 that the axe is laid to the root of the trees, even now. Therefore, every tree which does not bear good fruit is cut down and thrown into the fire. That's what's going to happen to the do-nothing folks on the day of judgment. Because as Jesus said, every branch in me that does not bear fruit, he takes away. Well, another thing that happens when good men do nothing, they help evil triumph. Evil, sin, and sinful men must be opposed. We talked about that in the lesson this morning. God commands those who are good not just to avoid evil, but to actively oppose it. In Ephesians 5 and verse 11, we are not only to have no fellowship with the unfruitful works of darkness, but we're to do what? We're to reprove or expose those unfruitful works of darkness. We just can't sit on the sidelines and talk about it. We've got to jump into the fray and do something. We've got to stand firm against evil, against sin, against false teaching and such things. Those who do nothing about sin and evil help sin and evil to prevail and prosper. The one who is silent when there are those around him in sin becomes a partaker with them. And in that same chapter in verse 7, therefore do not be partakers with them. We become partakers by default when we see evil and do nothing about it. You remember in the days of Elijah, the silence of many allowed the evil of Ahab and Jezebel to prevail. People just wouldn't speak up, wouldn't jump in and do something about it. In 1 Kings 18 and verse 21, a very telling thing happens. It says, Elijah came to all the people and said, how long will you falter between two opinions? If the Lord is God, follow him. But if Baal, follow him. And then, very sadly, the text says, but the people answered him not a word. They helped evil triumph by doing that, didn't they? It's pretty pitiful. The silence of the people spoke volumes about their indecisiveness and their inaction. So they failed to stand up, to speak out, and that permitted the wicked Ahab and Jezebel to win the day. In Luke chapter 10, the story of the Good Samaritan, Jesus tells about a traveler that was beaten and robbed by evil men and left for half dead. And then the Levite and the priest come by, and they allow this evil to go unanswered, don't they? They allow it to go unanswered and unchallenged by doing nothing as they pass by on the other side. I can just see them saying it or thinking it, I don't want to get involved. You've probably heard that from people over the years. But fortunately, there was one traveler, the Samaritan, who was willing to stand up for what was right. He was willing to get involved. In Matthew 12 and verse 30, Jesus warns us that he who is not with me is against me. He who does not gather with me scatters abroad. So in the fight against evil, there's no middle ground. There's no gray areas. There's no neutrality. There is no, I don't want to get involved. Those who are not actively and vigorously fighting against evil are helping evil to triumph. Well, when good men do nothing, they're no longer good. They mistakenly believe that good is merely the act of doing that which is evil, and that's not just not so. One is good not merely because he does no evil, but because he is actively working for what is good. 1 Peter 3 and verse 11, let him turn away from evil and do good. We can't just turn away from evil and do nothing. We have to turn away from evil and do good. James explained in James 4 and verse 17, a verse that most of us are familiar with, to him who knows to do good and does not do it, to him it is sin. We talk about the sins of commission versus the sins of omission. Most people believe, well, as long as I don't do evil, I'm not sinning. Well, that's not true, because they're right in that they're not doing evil. And that covers the sins of commission. But to know to do good and not do it is the sin of omission. Remember when the brothers of Joseph decided that they were going to murder him? Who stepped in? Reuben stepped in. He attempted to deliver Joseph, but he vacillated and he hesitated, didn't he? So he maybe saved Joseph from not being murdered, but what did the brothers do instead? They sold him into slavery. When Reuben heard what they had done, he realized his failure to act had helped to bring about this evil result. And instead of correcting the error, Reuben sought to cover his guilt by agreeing with his brothers to lie to their father about Joseph's disappearance. There's a saying that the road to hell is paved with good intentions. Reuben maybe had some good intentions, but he didn't act, did he? And he was no longer good as a result. He knew his inaction and absence made him just as guilty as the rest of his brothers, and that guilt continued to haunt him through the years. You remember in Genesis 42 when Joseph reveals himself to his brothers, Reuben was the first to speak up, and he said, fellas, we're going to get what we deserve, because he had a guilty conscience. In the little book of Obadiah, the prophet Obadiah condemned the Edomites for doing nothing when evil was befalling their brethren, the Jews. You remember the Edomites were the descendants of Esau, so they were very closely related to the Israelites. When Jerusalem was invaded by her enemies, the Edomites, according to the book, stood on the other side. In other words, they did nothing but watched the slaughter as spectators. God said, by their failure to act to help their brethren, even you were as one of them. You might as well join in other words. You're just as guilty as the people that did the actual slaughtering. Well, today there are Christians and even some preachers that fail and refuse to meet the real foe. They refuse to refute error and fight the enemy. They're just a little too squeamish about it. Turn over to 2 Corinthians chapter 10. Again, I don't get a kick out of standing up against error, but it has to be done. We need to realize the nature of our warfare. In 2 Corinthians 10, beginning in verse 3, though we walk in the flesh, we do not war according to the flesh. So we don't fight a physical battle, it's a spiritual battle. For the weapons of our warfare are not carnal, they're not guns and knives and bombs and bullets, but mighty in God for pulling down strongholds, casting down arguments, and every high thing that exalts itself against the knowledge of God, bringing every thought into captivity to the obedience of Christ. We are fighting ideology that is against God, is against Christ, is against the gospel. Sometimes these brethren that are squeamish about it, they will savage people, all right, but they'll savage the brethren that stand against evil. Sometimes they're filled with bitterness and hatred, and they maliciously attack, slander, and misrepresent the Christians that are willing to stand up and be counted. Paul warned about such men in Galatians 5 and verse 15. He says, if you bite and devour one another, beware lest you be consumed by one another. Those that engage in that kind of behavior are, in essence, spiritual cannibals. They are no longer doing good. While the conduct of weak-kneed Christians is shameful, what about the supposedly good men that do nothing? They stand on the other side like the Edomites and do nothing but watch as their brothers are being slandered, slaughtered, and devoured from a spiritual standpoint. And in doing that, they cease being innocent bystanders and idle spectators. It goes back again to this, I don't want to get involved attitude. Their failure to act and sit on the sidelines not only allows evil to triumph, but makes them just as guilty as the spiritual cannibals that refuse to reprove and rebuke error. In God's words, even you are as one of them. Well, that's a short lesson this evening, and I hope an instructive one. Those that fail or refuse to do good in the face of evil are sowing very dangerous seeds. Remember the principle of sowing and reaping. Be not deceived. God is not mocked. For whatsoever a man sows, that shall he also reap. Doing nothing good as Jesus commanded them to do, they are in effect helping evil to win. And by doing so, they've ceased to be good and have become partakers of the very evil they did nothing to stop. Remember that quote, all that is necessary for the triumph of evil is that good men do nothing. So we cannot sit idly by and do nothing. Because when we do that, we allow evil to triumph. So we need the courage to stand up and be counted, to speak up against evil, speak out against the deeds of evil men and their sin. If you're here tonight and you're not a Christian or in some way need to obey the gospel, we want to encourage you as we stand and
don't you want to go to the